All right. Johnny Cakes and the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypso. One of 10 bands performing animal songs, just like that one, and more, and covers, all kinds of animal songs, at the Talking Animals Music Night. March 31st at New World Brewery. More on that in a moment. But that one was the Donkey Song to ease us into today's edition of Talking Animals. My name's Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Ellie Lax, the founder of the Gentle Barn. A Southern California sanctuary of sorts that houses an array of animals that have been rescued from abuse, neglect, or slaughter. After they recover, the animals become permanent residents of the Gentle Barn, where they are visited and often cared for by abused children. We'll hear about the Gentle Barns, including some stories about some of the animals living there and some of the children visiting there and more, including Ellie's own story. Any luck? When we speak with Ellie Lax in a few moments here on Talking Animals, as usual, we'll also welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@wmnf.org. Also a bit later in the show, we'll step into the Comedy Corner, which involves animal comedy. We'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a pair of tickets to see Portugal the Man at the Ritz Ebor on April 11th. And we'll speak briefly a bit later with Twyla Cole, Humane Society of Pinellas County's Director of Development, Events, and Community Relations, about the organization's Muttstrut event happening this Saturday, March 17th, at Eagle Lake Park in Largo. This marks the 20th annual Muttstrut. So we'll chat with Twyla about that a bit later in the program. Right now, though, it's time for the Animal News and Announcements segment. A look at items of interest in animal news, as well as announcements of local events on the horizon. Produced, as always, by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department. Our first item continues to be self-referential. That's the Talking Animals Music Night, the aforementioned, featuring 10 great bands from the Tampa Bay area and a little beyond, performing animal songs. It'll be held March 31st at New World Brewery, featuring a musically diverse slate of bands, including Sons of Hippies, Johnny Cakes and the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypso, Rebecca Pulley and Rob Pastore, Ricky Wilcox, and the Moonsnake, Sunset Bridge Band, Talk to Mark, featuring Scott Elliott, WMNF Zone, host of the All Souls edition of It's the Music, normally today, right after Talking Animals. Unfortunately, he's feeling under the weather, so it'll be another dose of me filling in for Scott. But other bands include Tribal Style, Acme Jazz Garage, The Happiness Machine, and Rayzilla's PBS, featuring Ray Villadonga, one of the hosts of Step Outside, Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. to midnight right here on WNF. So if you're familiar with even just some of these bands, you'll know that the evening will cover tremendous ground musically, Americana, funk, folk, calypso, jazz, rock, reggae, world music, and more. Whatever their style or genre, though, all these bands will be playing animal songs and starting to get word of what people are thinking about playing, what they're planning to play, and it's getting to be more fun and exciting. So it's going to be a great night. Don't miss it. Tickets will be a modest $8 in advance, $10 at the door, in this benefit for WMNF. So go to WMNF.org for tickets or more information, or you can call, of course, right here, 813-238-8001, and speak with Miss Julie about tickets. So we'll hope to see you there. And, of course, one of the things that's fun that I pointed out to a few folks who thought, hey, yeah, that's a good point, is some of these bands, sure, you can see them around town, and maybe you have recently. But have you seen them play animal songs, folks? I think not. All right, on to some news in and around the state and beyond. Starting with this kind of update from the Tampa Bay Times. Headline, Jurassic Park Bill for Zoos heads to Rick Scott. Governor Rick Scott will decide whether 16 Florida zoos and aquariums should be able to lease state-owned land to conduct, quote-unquote, enhanced research on a variety of animals, including giraffes, zebras, and rhinoceroses. The idea of HB 1117 was overwhelmingly popular with the legislature. The Senate approved the proposal 39-1 to 1 on Friday. The House passed it last week, 113-2. The dissenters were Senator Paul Dockery, Lakeland, Representative Rick Kreisman, St. Petersburg, and Representative Mark Pafford from West Palm Beach. Representative Sean Harris and Temple Terrace introduced the bill out of fondness for Lowry Park Zoo, as detailed by the article February 27th, the Tampa Bay Times article by Craig Pittman. The zoo official hailed the idea for putting Florida on the map, was a quote, now on the map as far as being progressive on conservation. Opponents, including Lori McDonald, the Defenders of Wildlife, dubbed it the Jurassic Park Bill due to the risk of animal escape. They warned the exotic animals could introduce non-native diseases. Although the bills talk about research, the main reason the zoos want the land is to have room to create large breeding populations, Kilmer explained. Right now, they lack the space for breeding large herds of giraffes and rhinos. If they need more, they have to import them at great expense. And what may or may not be a related note, saw this a day or two ago in the Palm Beach Post over on my side of the state. Headline, Sniffing Out Snakes. It starts off, stories about pythons and Labrador retrievers usually don't end well for the dogs, but the story of Jake and Ivy, black labs trained to hunt pythons in the Everglades, has a happy ending for the dogs. Quote, I was amazed, said Christina Ramagosa, a research fellow at Auburn University. The university's EcoDog program recently released details of the multi-agency pilot project. The dogs definitely knew what they were doing. After months of training, which included curbing the dogs' instincts to swim and come very close to their targets, Jake and Ivy hit the Everglades in November 2010. With noses down and tails wagging, the dogs found 19 pythons, most between 6 and 8 feet long, and one pregnant with 19 eggs. The dogs were 2.5 times more likely to find a python and twice as fast as teams of 2 to 6 humans who must rely only on their vision to find the well-camouflaged, very still snakes. Some methods used to train the dogs are, quote-unquote, trade secrets, said Craig Angle, associate director of veterinary sports medicine at Auburn University, who helped with the process. Some techniques are similar to training an elite athlete for endurance and strength, Angle said. The dogs learned the scent from coffee filters that have been rubbed on pythons of different sizes. Then they worked with pythons in bags. They traveled to the University of Florida, where they worked with live pythons in large enclosures. Goes on to later say that they are specifically trained about wind currents and how the trees break up the wind scent. But perhaps most importantly, if you're just hearing about this for the first time, they learn to sit and stay when they're about 15 feet away from the snake. So, well out of the strike zone, they call it. Okay, locally, I want to mention again, coming up March 24th, there is Party Like a Pinup, which benefits pinups for pit bulls, and sounds like quite a bash. It's going to be at the Cuban Club, Ybor City. And it'll be a 40s pinup theme, burlesque shows, silent auction, live bands, food, drinks, etc. Shorty Rossi and Pit Boss will be on hand, as he was recently. Very, very popular guy. We're going to speak to him at some point on the show. We tried to actually speak to him tied to this forthcoming event, and just didn't work schedule-wise. But we will at some point. He's got a new memoir out, and... And people flock to this guy. So anyways, Party for a Pinup, March 24th at the Cuban Club. And you'll find out more by going to partylikeapinup.org. Also coming up, the Racing Dog Rescue Project's Adoption Center Spring Open House is Sunday, March 25th from 1 to 3 p.m. The Adoption Center is located at 1801 Verna Road in Miyaka City. Racing Dog Rescue Project is a 501c3 nonprofit run by volunteers whose mission is to rescue, rehabilitate, and find forever homes for retired racing greyhounds. Racing Dog Rescue Project currently serves the Florida counties of Manatee, Sarasota, Charlotte, and DeSoto. For more information, you can visit rdrp rdrp-greyhound.org. rdrp-greyhound.org. And that might well do it at the moment. Got a busy show today, so anyway, I think we will step now into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which as always involves animal comedy. I was thinking about something horse or barn related as a prelude to our chat with Ellie Lax and decided on this by Jerry Seinfeld. Here's a portion of a piece called Horses from Jerry Seinfeld on today's Comedy Corner. I'm talking him.
Why do we use the term horsepower? Is that also to insult the horse? The space shuttle rocket boosters, each one has 20 million horsepower. Why are we still comparing it with the horse? Any chance we're going to go back to using horses for rockets, trying to keep track of how many we're going to need? Hey, horses, the rocket engines broke down. Can you get 20 million friends together really fast?
20 million, that's a lot.
They do make glue out of horses. I have no idea how they do it. Or who even saw that potential. That's a brainstorm in my book. But what are you, working in a stationery store? You see a horse walk by the window?
Wait a minute. I think he could be glue.
Are you sure? I'm positive. How do we pick out the really sticky ones? You leave that to me. What about that one over there? He's weaving around. He looks like he's out of his mind. He'll be crazy glue. To me, the toughest part of the horse's life is the horse trailer. I don't know who designed that. Is that the best way to move a horse out on the highway? Is that what we all need to see? Their huge, fat, disgusting asses right in my face? Is it good for the horses? They're probably standing in the back going, do you feel a draft, Bill? I can't see anything back there, but it's awfully breezy, isn't it? You don't think our huge, fat asses are hanging out the back of this truck, do you? Why the hell would they do that to us? They already ride us around and kick us while we're peeing. What's the point in sticking our ass out of a truck?
All right. That was Jerry Seinfeld with a portion of a piece called Horses. Take it from his album. I'm telling you for the last time, I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to speak with today's guest, Ellie Lax. As I mentioned earlier, Ellie is the founder of the Gentle Barn, a Southern California sanctuary of sorts that houses an array of animals that have been rescued from abuse, neglect, and slaughter, where they're visited and often cared for by children who themselves have been neglected and abused. So, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Ellie Lax to Talking Animals. Good morning, Ellie.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Oh, I love being here. Thanks for having me.
Cool. Well, let's, there's so much I want to discuss about the Gentle Barn, now and in recent years, but that may be putting the cart before the healing horse, maybe, as it were. So because the Gentle Barn really appears to be the fruition of, the lifelong dream and really vision of yours, maybe you could tell us a little bit first about your formative years. What sort of animal, role did animals play for you as a kid, for example?
Well, when I was a kid, I was kind of one of those strange children that kept bringing animals home when I found them lost or hungry or injured. And while I was saving them, they kind of were always saving me. I struggled as a kid to kind of fit in and know who I was, and animals always helped me with that. They were always my best friends.
And so sounds like you were the kid that sort of gathers up, you know, animals around that need some help or need tending to. But were you also living with animals? Were animals part of the house, the family growing up?
No, we had a family dog and that was about it. But then we lived always near forests and lakes, so I was always bringing ducks home or bunny rabbits or snakes or turtles. I don't know. There was always some kind of animal I was trying to bring home.
And how did? Go ahead, sir.
Oh, I was just going to say my parents were not amused.
So were they kind of anti-animal types or just sort of indifferent? Or?
Well, I think they probably just didn't want to take care of all of them. I mean, it was very nice that I was bringing them home. But, of course, when you're a little kid, the burden of taking care of animals always falls on the parents.
So sure.
While I had a dream of having a house full of animals, I don't think my parents shared that same dream.
I see. So then what happened, you know, sort of over time? Was that kind of a continuing pattern in childhood? Hey, I bring these animals home. I fix them up. My parents look askance at times. But did that pretty much continue on into your teen years and beyond?
Yeah, it's all I've ever been doing is always taking animals home that needed me. And when I was a kid, my parents would get rid of them when I was at school, so it was really terrible. And I'd say, oh, my God, how can you do this to me? And my parents would say, well, when you grow up, you can have as many animals as you want. So throughout my life, I've always been bringing in orphaned animals. But now, officially, the General Barton has 138 animals.
Wow. So I guess they were prophetic in a way that they probably never imagined back then.
Right. Yeah. They probably didn't realize I would take them up on it.
Right. Wow. So let me let folks know this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we're talking with Ellie Lax, founder of the General Barn, a sanctuary of sorts that houses abused animals and helps abuse kids, promoting kind of healing in all directions. So if you'd like to join the conversation, ask Ellie a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. So given that history, Ellie, and sort of, you know, jumping ahead a little bit to where you are now with 138 animals on hand, I mean, you know, before you got to where we are now, and you know, have this history of always kind of bringing home and rescuing and helping heal animals, were you in the earliest stages of kind of conceiving what became the General Barn, which came first, like having a place that always just helped animals heal, having a place that helped kids like you, kind of isolated kids, it sounds like, other Ellies maybe, heal, or was it always intertwined?
Yeah, it was always intertwined. My 7-year-old temper tantrums to my parents when they would get rid of my animals when I was at school was I would say to them, you'll see when I grow up, I'll have a huge place full of animals and I'll show the world how beautiful they are. So it was kind of this dream of mine since I was 7.
Wow.
To have a big place full of animals that I can bring them to when they're lost. And then we together can help children who are lost and struggling come and find themselves among the animals.
Sure. But again, I'm struck by, I mean, we've all either had or seen or dealt with 7-year-olds with tantrums saying, you know, these big lofty things. But you delivered. It's like, hey, I'm going to do this. And boy, you went right ahead and did it. Was there still nonetheless like kind of a, always like an evolution, like, hey, I'm going towards this, or was there some sort of, you know, light bulb moment or whatever where, you know, as you were in your teens and beyond, you thought, okay, here's how I make good on what I was promising when I was in that 7-year-old tantrum?
Yeah, the 7-year-old tantrum became an obsession, and it's all I ever wanted, and it's all I ever thought about, and it's all I ever said to myself, this is what I'm going to do. But I had absolutely no idea how to start. You know, I didn't know what that very first step was, and I was kind of waiting to win the lottery. But almost 13 years ago, I stumbled upon a petting zoo I'd never seen before. So I went in just to check it out, and there was a lot of animal suffering. It was 110 degrees. And there was no water on the property, and they were beating the ponies to keep going around in circles carrying kids, and there were dead animals in cages, and it was just terrible.
Mm.
So I was running out through the door as fast as I could to get out of there, and there was a goat in my way. And I noticed she had a big, pussy, bloody tumor on her leg, and her toenails were 2 feet long, so her legs were deformed, and she couldn't walk.
Mm.
And the way she was looking at me was like, could you help me, please?
Mm.
And so just on instinct, I was like, yes, I'm going to help you. And I went to find the owner and said, can I have that goat? And they said, no. And I said, well, can I buy her name your price? And they were like, lady, get out of here. And I said, well, here's the thing. I told the goat I would help her, so I'm going to stay here till you say yes. And I stayed there for 12 days. And on the 13th day, they said, take this goat and get out of here.
And that is a great story. And what can you tell us a little bit more about what you meant by stay there? Like for 12 days, like you just planted yourself? Or I mean, like how, you know, how constant a presence were you? Obviously enough where they finally said, get out. But that's great. But I mean, so what was that really like? You just sort of sat in a chair there and said, hey, you know, I'm here again today. I will be until you give me that goat.
Yeah, basically, I mean, that little goat looked into my eyes and steered her way to my soul, and so I was not going to leave her there.
Mm-hmm.
So I would basically show up at 6 o'clock in the morning and say, hey, can I have Mary? And they'd say no, and they'd say okay. And I would just plant myself next to her and spend the entire day with her. And then at closing time, I'd say, okay, can I have her? And they'd say no. And I'd go, okay, see you tomorrow. And I was there from the minute they opened till the minute they closed until finally they couldn't stand the sight of me anymore. They asked me to get out of there.
Wow. Well, that's so cool. But it also sounds like a really pivotal moment for you, too.
It was pivotal. And, you know, I wasn't thinking at the moment, ooh, this is my chance to start the gentle barn. I was just going, I cannot leave this goat here because she's going to die without me.
Yeah.
And so I just took a stance and brought her home and fixed her. And then 3 months later, I was kind of haunted by the images of the other animals suffering there.
Yeah.
I went back to them and said, look, I can really help the animals. You can't. No questions asked. I'll take them off your hands. And the lady started dragging animals out of the back and gave me this huge heap of animals that were dying, basically. And I took them all home and fixed them all. And then I looked out my window to a backyard full of animals, and that's when I realized, I think I just started the gentle barn here. Because once my backyard was full of animals, I realized, okay, now there's no turning back.
Right, right. Well, I was going to ask, as you were just telling that story, like, you know, where was home where you were even in a position to keep bringing those animals there? Where, what kind
of... I lived in the valley in Los Angeles, okay. And I had a little half-acre backyard, which was originally agricultural zoning.
Okay.
So, you know, some of my neighbors had horses. I didn't. I just had dogs, but it turned into a backyard that could house those animals in the beginning.
Wow. Well, it's funny how just that you know, situation with the goat, like you said, it was a pivotal moment, but for a lot of us, those pivotal moments, we don't know they're pivotal at the time, but it sounds like from there, all those other animals from that place, and here you began the gentle barn, I guess, out of the backyard first of that house.
Yeah, and once I realized, oh, wow, I've started the gentle barn, that's when I just picked up the phone and started calling probation camps and drug and alcohol rehab centers and foster homes, and I'd say, hey, bring your kids, and they started bringing their kids, and we quickly outgrew that place, and so 8 years ago, we moved to where we are now in Santa Clarita, California, and we've been here ever since. Our 13th anniversary is coming up soon, and the rest is history.
Wow. Well, so Ellie, so really, it does sound like from the very get-go, the idea, because you had already, in answer to my other question, said that kind of the way this evolved, both elements, helping animals and helping, you know, kids like that was intertwined. But it sounds like really early on, I mean, like when you called up the probation folks and other folks and said, hey, I've got this yard full of animals, you know, come bring people by. I mean, what were the responses early on when you were just, you know, kind of, I mean, no one knew the gentle barn, no one really probably knew you. What was that like initially?
Oh, they love the idea.
Okay.
You know, there's something about children with animals. Animals offer unconditional love and no judgment, so it really doesn't matter who you are. Animals are going to love you for who you really are.
Yeah.
But there's an added twist. It's not just animals. It's animals that have been through abuse and neglect, like the children we're working with. So there was something about that mixture of putting kids with the mirror images of themselves in animal form that is just so healing, and I think the agencies that I called understood. Like, they got it. So they're like, okay, we'll be over.
And do you remember, I'm sure you probably do, the very first kind of, after you made those initial calls, the very first interaction that you witnessed between one of those animals you had brought back, one of those abused animals, and a kid that was either disadvantaged or abused, and you know, at what, you know, sort of was the beginning of the gentle barn? I mean, could you sort of describe what that, I imagine that was a pretty powerful moment for you.
Yeah, it was really powerful. I remember the very first group we had was a probation camp for teenage boys called Pacific Lodge Boys Home in Woodland Hills. And they were right around the corner, so they said, hey, you know, we'll come over, we'll bring the guys. And, you know, animals saved me when I was a child, so I really had this vision of how animals could be there for other kids. But it was all just a concept, and I guess maybe there was a tiny voice wondering, you know, is this just a pipe dream? Is this real? Like, is this going to be what I really think it's going to be? And when the kids came and they were so tough and so defensive and so guarded at first, and when I started telling the stories of the animals and then pairing them up with animals and seeing them hug them and kiss them and being on the ground cuddling with them and how they melted from kind of gang member to sweet little vulnerable humble boys, when I saw that magic right in front of me, I was like, wow.
Yeah.
This is way more powerful than I even thought was possible. I was like, wow, this is this is definitely what I'm going to do for the rest of my life.
Wow. Well, it does sound powerful. And Ellie, from your standpoint, how important is it to what happens at the General Barn with these disadvantaged and abused children to the healing that takes place, that most of these animals are farm animals? I know cats and dogs live there too, but I don't know. I guess I know I might be more inclined to tell my troubles, you know, to a goat or a pig. I mean, do you find that it's easier for the kids to engage kind of more profoundly to unburden themselves or just maybe see themselves in the stories that you say that you tell them about a particular goat or pig or horse that and how they arrived at the barn?
Yeah, because, you know, the kids we work with, they're so shut down and wounded and guarded that traditional therapy doesn't work with them. So remember, they were hurt by people, so mm-hmm. It's really, really hard for them to trust humans.
Sure.
So with the help of the animals and the stories of the animals, they somehow feel seen, and we can talk indirectly to them through a story of an animal instead of talking directly to them and seeing them shut down.
Sure.
And so they open up faster with an animal than they probably would a person. And it's kind of the thing where the kids we work with are not talking to their therapist, but once we get the kids with a therapist here with the animals, it's kind of like a starting off point where then once they've shared this experience and once they've bonded with an animal that they see themselves in, then when they go back, the therapist has a starting point to really get inside the kid, and all of a sudden the kid has something to talk about, and then their therapy experience is successful, whereas before the General Barn, it's going nowhere.
Wow, so it really kind of gives a portal of sorts then for that therapist or whoever to maybe make some headway that just wouldn't be possible without the kind of breakthroughs that's happening at the General Barn with these kids.
Yeah, the way I see it is the animals are kind of a key to mm-hmm. unlock these kids. These kids are shut down, locked down, no one can get in, they don't care about anything, and the animals are kind of a key that open them up, get them vulnerable and humble, get them talking about their own experiences, getting them talking about how they see themselves in the animals. And also, you know, being around the animals is a chance to show them that they have good inside themselves. These kids are so used to being told, sit down, shut up. They're either on drugs, you know, on medication or in jail. And when I watch them with the animals, it's a chance to go, wow, you were so gentle just then, or wow, you were so safe and trustworthy, or wow, you were so generous. And they've never been mirrored like this before. These kids don't get praise and compliments. They get in trouble.
Yeah.
So they get to spend 2 hours here where all I'm telling them is, wow, you're so good and you have such value. And then they start taking that feedback and seeing themselves that way. And that in itself can change a life. Because if you see yourself as bad, unwanted, unlovable, that's going to determine the course of your life.
For sure.
But if you can start to see yourself as good and lovable and worthy, then that can change your life right there.
Absolutely. And also, I've certainly read and heard some things that over the years from kids that have gone there, when you would, you know, tell them a particular animal story, and maybe unfortunately this animal, you know, was beaten or whatever, and often, maybe not initially, but maybe quietly later or something, you know, that kid would say, well, you know, that happened to me, or I know what that's like. But often it would say it to the animal, not necessarily to you at that moment or to anyone else. But again, back to what you're saying about just opening those kids up and seeing themselves in those often horrific stories.
Yeah, exactly right. And whereas I can't tell a kid that's been beaten by his alcoholic stepfather, I can't tell him, look, it's not your fault, because he's not going to believe me. But I can talk about an animal that was abused by an alcoholic, and I can talk about how that animal's not bad, and that animal didn't deserve it, and they can get the message indirectly that means they're not bad and it's not their fault. So they feel a huge sense of relief when they leave here, because they feel seen.
Well, and not to mention, it sounds like in many cases, as you're telling that, you can point to that animal that was, you know, beaten by that alcoholic who now, has healed and is living there happily and you know, maybe happy to have them come hang out or pet them or just spend some time with them. So.
Yep. And then, so the animals serve as role models for the kids. If the kids hear that animal has been beaten and spent 2 years trying to trust but is now walking around being loved by everybody, then they think, oh, well, there's hope for me. I can do that too.
Sure. So what, maybe, you know, I sort of gave a, just a very broad kind of phrase or two, about the gentle barn, early in the show and when I was introducing it, but maybe, and we've touched on obviously some things, but maybe you could just sort of say a little more specifically, Ellie, like, you know, what kind of thing happens, like, obviously, you know, kids come, and visit, but also I think one of the things that's really great is that then through those situations or through other means, some really come regularly and really start caring for one or more specific animals. Maybe you could talk a little about how that works and how that works for both the animals and especially the kids in question.
Well, we start off by rescuing animals from severe abuse and neglect, animals that no one else wants, animals that without us would be put to sleep. And we bring them in and we rehabilitate their bodies and their hearts and their minds. And it takes a while, but once they're healed, they stay here for the rest of their lives. And then they help us heal abused kids. So we work with kids in foster care, on probation, in gangs, on drugs, from the inner city, as well as special needs kids and adults. And it's a 10-month program. It runs September through June. And so the kids come in once a month for those 10 months. And every time they come, we tell different stories of different animals. They get to interact with, they get to groom the horses and take dogs on nature walks and build barns and fences so they can go, wow, look what I did. And they can chop fruits and vegetables for the pigs. And they basically, every time they come, they do something different.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all geared to talk about forgiveness and courage and trust and love and inspire them to know who they are and know what they want out of life. They get to make a wish at the wishing well every time they come here. And then every single time they come, we start off the sessions by asking them what is the best word that describes them and what is their dream. So they're always cultivating a self-awareness and a hope for the future.
Wow, that sounds pretty powerful. Again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Ellie Lax, founder of the Gentle Barn. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org. Now, Ellie, so at the, you know, so the sort of term, I guess, is, you know, September, June, but I would think, again, from what you're describing and just how profound the impact is, that many kids would say, well, okay, yeah, it's June, but I don't want to stop coming here. Can they continue, or how does that work?
Yeah, and that's the sad part. The sad part is that we work through agencies, not with individual kids.
Mm.
So, you know, we get whatever kids the agency select for us.
I see.
When our program does end, we always tell them that we're open to the public on Sundays, and we take volunteers, and they're always forever for the rest of their lives welcome to come back and visit. And I always say, you know, please, when you're rich and famous, please come back and see us, because I'm like, you know, I have faith in you, and I know that you're going to make great lives where you're happy, and please, you know, come back. So on their own, you know, they can bring their families and their friends and come and visit. But sadly, when their program ends, if the program sees fit not to bring the same kids the next year, there's not much we can do about it. But they do come back and visit me individually.
I'm sure. I'm sure some have the same kind of determination that you had as that 7-year-old with a tantrum, like, hey, I'm getting back there somehow. I'm not sure how. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, that's really, really cool. Well, we're in our final couple moments here, Ellie, but, you know, I mean, it's such an amazing thing. And again, there's obviously such, extraordinary healing in all directions. And I've also sort of read and heard that you hope to create multiple gentle barns, at some point, which, you know, I love the idea of that many more animals and kids and humans of various ages being helped and healed. But you live at this one, I think, with your family, if I'm not mistaken. It's your vision. It's your baby. What sort of concerns do you or anyone else have, I guess, about, you know, being, you know, one or several gentle barns that don't have your direct day-to-day oversight?
Well, those are the kind of things we're trying to figure out now. Because, yeah, our dream is to have gentle barns in every major city around the world. And so one of the things we're trying to figure out is, okay, let's start figuring out how to open the second one. Where will it be? Who's going to run it? And how are we going to train them? Because there is a particular combination of being able to see kids and love kids and be able to see and love animals. And there's a lot of people out there that love kids but not necessarily animals, or vice versa. So
mm-hmm.
We definitely have to attract the right combination of people to run it. And I don't know if once this place is 100% stable, whether we're going to train people to take this place over and then we'll go to the next one and start that one until it's self-sufficient, or if we can find the perfect people to just train from here and have them run it. Those those kind of details are what we're trying to figure out now, like exactly how to open the second one and with who.
Sure. Yeah, it sounds like a tall task. Yeah.
Yeah, it is, but we'll do it, and it's going to be great.
Yes. Well, again, I've already learned, even though I didn't know you as a seven-year-old, I already learned not to doubt you on any level. You're gonna get it done. Well, let's just in our final moments here, but let's get at least one caller involved in this. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Ellie Lax.
Hello.
Hello, it's you.
Hi.
I want to thank people like Ellie for being in the world today. It just reinforces my faith in mankind.
Well, hear, hear, man. Yeah.
I mean, I wanted to kind of get her feeling on in some of these urban areas where there's a lot of crime, and people see to get an animal like a pit bull or a German Shepherd, and the end result of that, of those animals protecting their property, end result of that is just they're tied to chains, and you see it a lot in Florida in the humidity, and they don't put water, they're abused. What could be done about that? About that scenario.
All right. Well, thank you for your call, Ellie. Did you have a response to that?
Yeah, that's why I think our work is so important, because while we're getting kids to see themselves and heal, we're also turning them into protectors instead of abusers, to realize that everyone has a story, everyone has a heart, everyone understands pain and fear, and everyone, whether it's animal or people alike, deserves to be treated kindly. And so, that's exactly what we do. We actually work with kids who abuse animals and do these terrible things and see pit bulls as machines and that whole thing, have a lot of prejudice. And through our program, they literally turn into protectors instead of abusers. And instead of wanting to walk around with a big, tough pit bull, all of a sudden the pit bull's in their bed and they're treating them like babies. So it's all about planting the seeds in these children, just to be kind, to grow up and be kind. And that's what we're working so hard to do. We also do school field trips. And so really, just in every day that we do our work, it's all about planting seeds of kindness in the hearts of children so that we can have a kinder world.
And obviously that's, going great guns. And let me ask you this. I mean, I think as the caller probably felt when he first called and made his comment, as I've done, as I've read and found out more, and just as I think a lot of people who are familiar with the General Barn feel, I mean, it's really a poignant, really a, powerfully emotional thing. I mean, all these years later, I mean, how is it for you? I mean, do you still just get the same feeling from that? Do you feel any kind of wear and tear from this, or just the opposite, just further inspired? I mean, it just seems like there's so much emotion and so much sadness that you're dealing with, and yet obviously there's so much healing that you're not only dealing with but really cultivating. But it just seems like there's a lot going on emotionally and over X amount of years. How has that been for you?
Oh, I feel like I'm the luckiest person I know. There's a lot of emotions here. There's a lot of joy. There's a lot of sadness because, of course, animals die and kids come in with such sad stories. But really, I mean, I get to watch miracles happen every single day. I get to see animals that are so shut down and have no hope, and I get to see them come alive again. And I get to work with kids that are really heading in a very dangerous path and turn their lives around so that they're kind, beautiful people instead of angry thugs. I get to see those kind of miracles every single day, and it never gets old. I wake up in the morning, and I can't wait for my day. And that's another thing that we impart to the children. We're all here with a gift, and we're all here to live our dreams. We're not here to suffer and hate our lives. So we kind of encourage the kids to really figure out what they're good at and what they love doing so that they, too, can grow up and live their dreams and wake up every morning ecstatic for the day.
Wow. Well, it's hard to beat that. Let me just ask one more thing, Ellie, and then we'll let you go. But I know there's been talk. I know Ellen DeGeneres is clearly a fan and gigantic supporter, and I think there's been talk sort of in the wake of that about a reality show sort of based on or based at the Jill and Barn. Can you just talk about that for a moment or two and how that would work?
Yeah. Ellen found out about us and has been very, very generous talking about us on her show and telling people about us, and we are just so grateful to her. And one of the things that she came up with is to have a reality TV show about the General Barn. so that the rescuing of the animals and the backstories of the kids and the backstories of the animals and how they come together and heal. I mean, it's so dramatic, and it's so, oh, my God, it's just, it's magic.
Yeah.
And so she wants to share it with the world. And so we are pitching it right now and keeping our fingers crossed. Hopefully
wow.
it'll be bought.
That's cool. You're not trying to give reality shows a good name, are you, by some chance?
Trying.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Ellie, thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals. There's other things I would have loved to have spoken about, and there's some other emails and callers that came in, but, you know, we just sort of got on a roll there. And but thank you again for the time today and just the amazing work you've done and that you continue to do. And and just let folks know that the great website is gentlebarn.org, and as all these organizations and situations, they always could use some donations, no doubt. And so check out the website, and if you're in the Southern California area, I believe it's the big spring festival this Sunday, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, this Sunday from 10 to 4, we're having a spring festival with a Native American drum circle and an animal blessing, and it's going to be really fun.
Awesome. Well, awesome things happen there, it sounds like, all the time. So thanks thanks again, Ellie, and we'll speak to you soon.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right, I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. There'll be a prize, a pair of tickets to see Portugal the Man at the Ritz Ebor on April 11th. To the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune, which, by the way, will be played by one of the bands performing at the Talking Animals Music Night. So in a moment, we'll chat with Twyla Cole about this Saturday's Mutt Strut. Right now, it's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals.
There was a guy an underwater guy who controlled all the sea. He got killed by 10 million pounds of sludge from New York and New Jersey.
All right, well, we'll take guesses that might come in for that off the air, because right now we want to talk with Twyla Cole from the Humane Society. Hey, how are you, Twyla? Welcome to back to Talking Animals. How are you?
Great, great. Thank you so much. How are you?
I'm really, really good, and really excited for this Saturday's Mutt Strut. It's the 20th annual, no less. So, tell us a little bit about it, because I know that on the one hand it's the 20th anniversary, but if I'm not mistaken, it's also a different location this year.
It sure is. This year we are going to be at Eagle Lake Park in Largo. It's right off of Keene Road and Nursery. It's a relatively new park in the area, and we're excited to bring our 20th Mutt Strut on shore and have it be a free to attend event for the first time ever.
Wow. Well, so tell us, for those who might not know, what is a Mutt Strut? What happens at a Mutt Strut?
First and foremost, we invite everybody to bring their dogs for an actual strut around Eagle Lake. It's a pledge walk. Ultimately, this is a fundraiser for us. It's our largest annual fundraiser, and we encourage people to generate pledges. Bring their pets. We do a walk. This year it's going to be led by Tiffany Michelle, Miss Tampa Bay, along with her dog Princess. We call out all of our shelter alumni so we can just all together enjoy our pets and strut for the homeless animals of the Humane Society.
Very, very cool. And then in addition to the walk, there's other activities of various kinds and people on hand. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what when people are done with walking, or let's just say for some reason they don't feel like walking but they still feel like coming to the Mutt Strut, what all is going to be going on?
Great, absolutely. We have a tremendous vendor lineup for this year. We've got vendors from our local pet animal hospitals, service centers, doggy daycares. We have mobile grooming facilities. We have Ask a Trainer coming in. all kinds of different animal-related but also human-related products and goodies, information, different banks that are popping up in the area that are going to just tell you about their services. And we have just a growing area, new businesses, and a lot of animal-loving organizations, whether they be directly animal-related or not. So it's just going to be a great variety. We have a kids zone this year for the first time. So we're going to have different interactive activities, bead making, bracelets. I think she's got some tattoos. Well, temporary tattoos for the kids.
Right, right. We should point that out. Yeah.
Yep. This year, Petco, the Petco Foundation, is a major presenter for us this year, and that's a wonderful new relationship as well.
Great. And also, speaking of all these animal-related things, if I'm not mistaken, and maybe you mentioned, I just happened to miss it, but also there's a number of adoptable pets, right, that'll be on hand that people, if they come and they say, hey, there's one I've fallen in love with, I'd like to adopt that one.
Yes, most definitely. We're going to have a couple of dogs coming out from the shelter. We're also going to have pit bull happenings. We'll have their rescue dogs out there. And Golden Retriever Rescue will be on site as well with adoptable dogs.
Very cool. So, again, let's just review the key points. It's this Saturday. It's March 17th. It's St. Patrick's Day, which may or may not tie in. If you want to wear green and come out, I think you should if you want to try to put green on your dog. But, again, dogs are welcome, right, to come if they're on leashes?
Yes.
Yeah.
Please bring your dogs. Everybody on leashes for everyone's safety.
Sure.
We're also doing a Pimp My Ride contest. So dogs that have a ride, a stroller, a wagon, as long as keep them safe inside, but decorate your wagons and your strollers for the Pimp My Ride contest.
Very cool. So I kind of interrupted myself, but again, it's this Saturday, the 17th, Eagle Lake Park in Largo from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. It's the 20th annual Mutt Strut, and again, more information presumably could be found at humanepinellas.org.
Perfect. Absolutely.
Oh, all right, Twyla. Well, good luck. Looking forward to it. Thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals.
Thank you so much, Duncan. Have a great day.
All right. You too.
All right.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. We have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. We'll be back next Wednesday. March 21st, well, I guess it will be Peter Gwynn, staff writer, National Geographic Magazine. Author of an extraordinary piece in the new issue about rhinos and rhino poaching. We'll talk all about that and more with Peter next week on Talking Animals, March 21st. Hope you'll join me then. Also, we'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. Talking Animals Outreach Consultant is Libby Basalis. My thanks to her. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Stay tuned for the fabulous... Well, no! Sorry. Bad news. Scott's not feeling well today. So I was going to say stay tuned for him as I normally do. But actually, I'm going to be filling in for Scott. He's not feeling well, as I say. And hopefully he'll be back next week. So I will be attempting to fill the very large shoes of Scott Elliott in the All Souls edition of It's the Music coming up shortly here. But we're closing out today's show, as always, with an animal tune. This one by one of the 10 bands performing at the Talking Animals Music Night, March 31st, at New World Brewery. So they performed this song last year at the Talking Animals Festival. Will they play it again at New World? Who knows? But it's playing now. It's Tribal Style's version of Lying in the Morning. Taking us up to the NPR News on WMNF Tampa. We'll see you next Wednesday at 11 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks so much for listening. Take care. In the morning, when you rise.
The lion, the iron lion.